Welcome to The Bag Mentality. On this podcast, we break down the box of the American dream and redefine success for a new generation. Interviewing the movers and shakers, the entrepreneurs, the creators, anyone out there making something happen in the world, let's get it.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Bag Mentality. Today, we have Justin Nguyen here. He is the host of the Young and Dumb, dedicated, up-and-coming, motivated, and bold podcast, which helps people understand how they can circumvent or supplement the traditional education system and make it in a fast-changing 21st century. So, Justin, tell me a little bit about yourself and tell me, how would you define yourself? Because I think people often put so many words and labels onto us. I just want to know how you define yourself, and then just tell me a little bit about your company.
Yeah. So thank you again for having me on this kind of challenge of 30 podcasts in 30 days. But a little bit about myself. Born and raised in Connecticut, moved down to Florida for college because I didn't really want to go and take my finals in the cold snow. So I was like, might as well do it while walking to class and having sunshine. So I came down here, my family followed me, so now I live down here. Graduated in December, had a job offer doing consulting, but decided to turn it down because ultimately I wanted to grow my brand and my podcast. So a little bit about the Get Your Grind Up brand, it's focused more on the traditional path to success. So if you look at a lot of my LinkedIn content, it's like, how can you get good grades? How can you network? How to reach out to people? Things that you would generally find in like going to school for a four-year degree, getting a corporate job, and then climbing the ladder from there. That moves into the Young and Dumb podcast, which, like you said, we interview young, dedicated, up-and-coming, motivated, and bold individuals. And that's where we get to uncover the non-traditional path to success. So like the influencers, the entrepreneurs, the esports gamers, all these different fields that are kind of starting to pop up because of the internet. We want to really realistically provide the path that it takes to be successful in these industries. Like, yes, you see Ninja making $500 to $1 million a month now, but you don't see the 8 years before where he was grinding in Halo or grinding to make a name for himself. So those are the kind of stories that we really want to uncover with our podcast. But yeah, in terms of labels, I just see myself as the guy who always felt like he never fit into the stereotypes that other people labeled him as. So I'm Asian, and the Asian stereotype is you're supposed to be smart naturally. And yes, I was smart, but also being with Asians is you're usually not athletic. And I was an athlete my whole life. I played soccer throughout my whole life. I was going to go play in college, but I broke my leg my junior year. So that's when kind of my whole mindset shift from athletics to school kind of started. And just to put it into perspective, like I was generally probably putting in anywhere between 40 to 60 hours a week into soccer. So now that that's kind of gone, it's like, well, crap, what do I do with my time? So that's where that whole mindset shift of I need to get my grind up and start working towards either a career, a business, or something. Got to find a way to make it all work.
Were you always entrepreneurial?
So I would like to say yes, but at the same time, my parents kind of stifled it, so to say. Growing up in a very traditional Vietnamese house, like the only really three career paths that were given to me were like, you need to be a doctor, a lawyer, or maybe an engineer. Like being in business, it was considered being broke. Like I was an athletic training major my freshman year, and I told my mom, like, Mom, I'm going to switch into finance. And she was like, why? You're going to be broke. You're going to have no money. I'm like, Mom, literally, if you look at the majority of the richest people in the world, they're all in finance, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's real estate or something, it's in finance. But just because of like that immigrant mindset, they don't realize that. So whenever I tried to start a business, so to say, like I was like, Mom, I want to start like flipping shoes because everyone was buying Jordans and selling them for like $400 or $500. I was like, oh, snap, you can make money. She was like, no, why would you wait in line? And so she would never drive me out to wait in line. But I always wanted to do things. I just never really had the opportunity to, especially with like playing a crap ton of soccer too.
Yeah, no, I don't, I wouldn't say I was always entrepreneurial either, but had a similar experience with not soccer, but basketball and kind of, losing that one thing that was driving me, in early years of college, had some knee injuries and really just like couldn't really play at the level that I wanted to. And then that kind of left a void in my life. When you figured out that, soccer wasn't going to be your thing, what specifically did you try, or what did you, how did that process look like, of figuring out like what was going to be your next thing? Did you just go out and try stuff, or did you have any like specific method for trying to figure out like what you're passionate about? Or
So it really came, I thank my freshman year roommate a ton for this, Gustavo Rios. He really set me down the path of business, because like I said, I really didn't know what business was going into college. I was athletic training, and my mindset was like, okay, I'm gonna go to school for like 4 years, get this degree, probably go to med school, and then figure out a way to work for like a professional team or something. And then I was sitting in my room playing FIFA, and I would always be interested in like, they have like the stock market on the game of players, and they have coin value. So the coin value usually fluctuates depending on how well the player played over the weekend and stuff like that. So you could trade, theoretically, you could trade coins, like you could trade stocks on the stock market. So what I did is, in a matter of like 3 or 4 months, I went from 0 to 1 million coins. And my roommate was like, dude, like, how are you doing this? Like, why aren't you in business? And I'm like, I'm over here like stressing about doing bio labs and chem labs and all this stuff, and like hating my life. My roommate's over there laughing at me playing FIFA because he finished his homework in like 30 minutes. And so we just kept talking, and he told me like, dude, look into finance. Like, I didn't even know what finance was. I didn't know what Wall Street was, what economics is, any of that. So I just started diving deep into it. And then I told my mom I wanted to switch majors, and then she was like, she gave me a whole bunch of crap for it, but ultimately she agreed with me. Well, I guess didn't necessarily agree, but just let me do it. And then that's kind of where we got to here. I ran into a guy named Gary V on the in on YouTube, and yeah, that's how I got into the whole entrepreneurship
yeah, funny how that happens with that Gary V guy.
thing.
Hear that story a lot. Yeah, so how did tell me how you started Get Your Grind Up. Where did that come out of?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, the stereotype of the Asians is like you're just naturally smart, and it's not a bad stereotype to have at all. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about it. But people, you would always say like, oh, you just get good grades, you don't have to study, or you just get those internships and you don't have to really work hard. And I was like, ha ha ha, like that's funny. But what I would do on my Snapchat, my Instagram story, like as a joke, was like I'd be grinding at work from like 2 to 11 working at Universal, and then I would get off at midnight and then go study for like an hour or two, get up the next morning and take the exam. And at the end of like studying, I'd be like, yo, just got off of work, like get your grind up, there's no excuses. And like, it became like a little banter between all my friends and I, and then they started liking it. So my girlfriend and one of my best friends from back home, Gary, was like, yo, let's turn this into an actual thing. So we just started like messing around and like testing with a whole bunch of things, and saw that when we looked back in like when we were in high school, like the career counseling industry was complete crap, and like we never really got the real guidance that we wanted to. Hence how I was really only pushed down like three paths too, like the engineer, the doctor, the lawyer. Like, you're really not told anything else besides don't be an English major because you'll never make any money. Those were like the four career things that I was told in my life. So that's what we really want to provide with Get Your Grind Up, and the podcast is like showing students how there's different journeys to life, rather than just forcing people to go down like four, especially with the accessibility to like the internet. Like, that's just what we want to provide, is just more value and more knowledge to all these people, these kids especially.
Yeah, no, I love that, and I totally resonate with the lack of options in, I mean, bless my college or high school, excuse me, guidance counselor's heart, but yeah, no, there was not really any direction or any reference points for what was possible. And it wasn't until, like, for me, it wasn't until I started listening to Tim Ferriss as a sophomore in college that I really discovered that, oh, wait, like, I could go and be an entrepreneur and do things that I love instead of going down these career paths that were like depressing to me. It was crazy. And so I love what you guys are doing. Where do you see, where do you see yourself being the most impactful in the life of, say, like a high school student? Where do you, based on your experience, want to be able to like impact someone the most?
So for me, what really rings home is when like immigrants or sons or daughters of immigrants come up and tell me like, hey, your story really helped me be able to like tell my parents that this isn't the journey that I wanted to be going on. Like a couple days ago, we hosted an event, our first event down in downtown Orlando, and a girl came up to me after I explained like my immigrants, or not my immigrant story, but my parents' immigrant story, and how I had to kind of push myself to be able to tell my mom and my dad like, no, this is the life I want to live, not necessarily your life. And she was like, that gave me confidence to go home and do that now. So like being able to motivate people to do that and live their own life versus their parents. Like I see so many of my Asian friends that I grew up with, and they're going down like the doctor path, and I'll talk to them like, hey, why are you going to become a doctor? They're like, oh, my mom and dad wanted me to, and it's like a good living. And I'm like, and I want to save people. I'm like, okay, that's great. But like, are you happy when you're taking these bio classes? And like, I see on their Snapchats and their Instagram stories, it's like, oh, another 20-hour shift at the hospital, like in my residency, or like all this stuff. And it's like, that doesn't seem like the life that I want to live. And I would never want to do that just to please my parents, so to say. But that's what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think I know, like for myself and a lot of people that I've met in the entrepreneurial space, that, you know, we've had to break the trend of trying to be something for someone else. Because really, if you want to take your own path, like you can't keep trying to please people who don't want what you want. And that doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean that like you don't want your parents to be proud of you and everything. But like, at the end of the day, if you don't allow yourself to take that path and figure out like what makes you feel alive, then you're always going to be selling yourself short, and you're never going to really hit that potential that you could maybe hit. So I love the metaphor you guys use on your podcast. It's the loading bar. So I'm gonna turn this around on you here and ask you, and maybe you can explain the metaphor a little bit. But Justin, where do you see yourself on your loading bar?
My loading bar, I think it's like 5%, honestly. And I always play between 3 and 5% because 3 is my favorite number. And 5 is also like, it's just a good solid number to go with, I guess. But yeah, I think I've got so much more to give, and I'm just kind of getting started. Like, dude, I'm 22 years old, and I've learned so much within like the past 2-3 years of being really interested in like business and entrepreneurship. And just imagine that compounded every single year. So yeah, 3 to 5%, man.
Awesome. 3 to 5%. We're writing that down. So tell me a little bit about how going into entrepreneurship has changed how you see learning and how you see education. Because like for me, when I started getting into, you know, creating my own companies and learning things because I wanted to learn them, it was a whole different ballgame than like sitting in a class because, you know, I thought I was supposed to. Have you seen a shift in yourself since you've taken that leap?
Yeah, so I've always been good at being able to like short-term memory things. Like I never really studied a crap ton in school. But I was able to be able to read the professor or the teacher whenever they're talking and know when they spoke about something really important. So I knew to write that point down so that I can like pinpoint to study that. So I was really good at knowing what exactly to study, not necessarily studying like the whole textbook or the whole chapter. In terms of how that's changed since like the world of entrepreneurship, I like the metaphor that Jordan Paris uses, where he says that he goes to McGraw University for college and he's graduated from like Google University and YouTube University, because I've literally learned everything that I needed to learn in business between YouTube and Google, and then obviously just going out and meeting successful business owners too. So the difference, I guess, that I've noticed is in college especially, it's not necessarily the book that's going to teach you, but who could teach you better or more is the actual professor in terms of those hours. I forget what they're called, the teaching hours or whatever, professor
office hours.
Office hours. That's what it is. Yeah, office hours, and being able to leverage their connections as well as your student card, and being able to meet business leaders in your area too.
How would you recommend someone who's listening to this, maybe high school or college, who doesn't really have a network right now, how would you recommend that they start building that network, which is so important, probably way more important than the actual facts and knowledge that you'll get out of school?
Most definitely. Like, especially if you're younger, the younger you are, the better. Like, we just had a guy named Jesse K on our podcast, and he started his podcast when he was 16 years old. And because he put in his tagline, like 16-year-old podcaster, he was able to get people like Gary Vaynerchuk on his podcast, Jack Dorsey, so the CEO and co-founder of Twitter and Square. So when you're younger, you leverage that. And the best way to do that is, if you want, you can start on LinkedIn. It's really easy. If you go to a university, you can search like alumni from your school. So for instance, for UCF, we've got people all over the world. One of the guys who created Shark Tank is actually a UCF alum. And there's a few Emmy Award winners. Like a couple weeks ago, I connected with a guy who's worked all in Silicon Valley. He's won an Emmy with ESPN, and he's from UCF. And I just connected with him, and now he's connecting me with a whole bunch of people from like the esports realm and other people from ESPN that are also Knights. So first, look at any university or any high school that you go to. And then after that, if you're really young, like you're in high school or something, you can easily just leverage social media, because you can say, I'm 14 years old, I'm 16 years old. And anyone who's older are going to look at you and either see themselves in you and be like, I want to give this kid a shot. Or they're going to be like, damn, I wasn't even thinking of this when I was 14 or 16 years old. So this kid must be really smart. So I'm going to have a 15-minute talk with him, or I'll grab coffee with him or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think people realize how powerful your youth can be. I was able to leverage it, luckily, before I got too old, as like a 21, 22 year old, hopping onto LinkedIn and just meeting people. I've realized that, I don't know what your experience has been, but especially on LinkedIn, people want to help you.
Oh yeah, dude. And it's funny though, because once you walk across that stage, it's like a wall gets built sometimes with some people. And I heard someone say the other day that the reason that is because once you walk across that stage and you're not a student anymore, people can look at you as competition versus as that kid or that student, because they don't necessarily know if you work for any company. They don't necessarily know what you do for a living. So even if you're 14 years old and you're running a business that could be a competitor to someone, they'll still take your meeting because you're young and you have that student card. But let's say you're 22 years old and you're running a social media company and you're trying to meet with like a marketing and media guru, they might look at you as competition. They're gonna be like, why do I want to give this 22-year-old advice when I was 22 years old? And if I were given this advice, I would have killed anyone else's competition. So why would I give it to him? So I guess that's kind of the reasoning behind it, which makes sense.
Do you have any tips or hacks or any advice specifically on finding mentors?
Mentors have always been tough for me because I live in Orlando, and Orlando's like an up and coming business scene, but there's no real business in Orlando because Orlando's weird, right? You got Tampa to our west, which is all the old money, which is great. There's a lot of great like old corporate moguls there, but it's like an hour and a half away, so it's kind of far. And then you also have Miami, which is a booming city right now, but that's also 3 hours away. Orlando's kind of in this weird spot where it's transitioning from just being known as like the theme park capital of the world to trying to grow the business side of things. So everyone is like new and upcoming in Orlando. So I'm starting to meet like new business owners, but it's harder for me to find like that stabilized, successful guy who's been doing it for like 20, 30 years. And I'm slowly starting to tap into that industry, but it's been really hard for me because it's no one that I know knows anyone there.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, that is tough. It's interesting. There's like Minneapolis is a city I'm out of, and people don't really know about it, but it's got a huge startup and entrepreneurial community here. And I think it'll be really interesting as we get more connected to, for us individually to help our cities tell their stories, really help people understand what's going on. Because I didn't know that about Orlando at all.
Yeah, it's weird because like when most people think of Orlando, right, they think of Disney, they think of Universal or SeaWorld or any of the theme parks. And that's what they're starting to try to move away from, so to say, because yes, that's great, but the city is more than that. And those theme parks have been able to push Orlando into becoming the like number one tourist destination in the world. So now they're trying to quote unquote monetize it better than just a theme park. So that's why they're trying to build out the businessy side of it.
Gotcha. So a little different direction here. What do you think about esports?
Dude, I love esports. It's going to be an industry that I am looking to attack in the next like 1 to 5 years. Like, I'm starting to build up all my connects. Me and Michelle went out to the EMLS competition in Dallas in January, I think, or January, February. And it was intense. Like, I play FIFA and I'm pretty decent at FIFA. Like, I usually qualify or usually get to like gold one in foot champs. But these are the dudes that are going 30-0 every single weekend and are putting thousands of dollars into the game to buy the best players. And it's so funny to watch because it's like there was 22 computers lined up on one side and then 22 computers lined up on the other side replaying on like what the guys were playing. And it's so intense. Like, they're the guy that we know, he's a Orlando City's EMLS player. He's one of the more he's got character to him, if you want to say. So he, anytime he scores, he's Hispanic, so he loves to scream vamos, and his thing is hashtag secure the bag. So he's always screaming vamos. It's like 3-3 on 85th minute and he scores. He's screaming vamos for the whole crowd, or like everyone to hear him. He doesn't care if he's disturbing anyone, it doesn't matter. And it's honestly like a real sports atmosphere. So I'm very bullish on it, and I'm extremely excited because I'm an avid gamer myself. I'm just not as good, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited about the space as well. I think, you know, what do you think about the digital placement and advertising market that's going to pop up around esports?
So the problem with esports is ads are great, right? You see it with Overwatch League and all that. Some of those players are getting paid millions of dollars each year on salary and bonuses and whatnot. The problem with ads is it's how do you track your return? And the risk that an Overwatch League has, or NBA 2K League, or League of Legends League has, compared to an NBA or an MLS or NFL, is that it all depends on the developer of the game. And that's the biggest problem, because you're seeing Fortnite right now, right? They just released an update and everyone seems to kind of hate it. And their players are going, the number of users are going down. Apex got released a couple months ago, and I think there's some stat that like Fortnite lost like 40% of its revenue over like a month's time or something like that to Apex once it got released. So it's so volatile right now because it really depends on the developer. If they make a change that can completely change the game, it's not like NBA where they're going to change the size of the hoop on a moment's notice, or they're going to change the size of the backboard. That almost never happens. Whereas in a game like Fortnite or Apex, or even FIFA, it can happen in a matter of weeks or even months. So that's why it's scary for ads, because it's like, is it going to be relevant?
It's the Wild West, definitely. Do you think, and maybe this is an ignorant question, but do you think some kind of system where an advertiser could buy placements on, you know, like a platform where the game is just plugged into that platform and whatever game is performing well, you know, shows the ads? You think that
like
would
work? PlayStation or like on the
Xbox or
something?
Yeah, right. Like if the developers had to accept a platform where the platform would take ads and then pay out based on the users.
So like, I know for like the EMLS and the 2K League, they're sponsored by the PS4. So everything is played on the PlayStation. I don't know how that would work, because in terms of ads, the reason that companies do ads is the viewership side. It doesn't necessarily matter if the game is good or bad in their eyes. They just care if people are seeing it. And the scary part that comes with that is the consistency side. I mean, you see game titles going up and down. Like Call of Duty used to be the game, and it was a game for about, I want to say, 5 to 8 years or so. And then League of Legends started popping off, Overwatch started popping off, Fortnite started popping off, and then you slowly start seeing it decrease, 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 where something like that doesn't necessarily happen so quickly in the traditional sports scene because it doesn't move as quickly, right? You might see a rule change in the NFL, and it'll be like one rule change every year or one big one every like 5 years, right? Whereas in Fortnite, the game from season one to season, I think they're on like 7 or 8 now, there's been literally updates every 2-3 weeks and it changes just like that. So it's just that volatility that I think scares advertisers to go on it, but there is money in it. I think the more important side is the personal branding side of the players, because from my understanding and from all the pro players that I've seen, they view themselves as their value to their company or the club or whichever they're playing under as a good player. If they value themselves depending on their skill, which is important, so to say. But if you look at the revenue models of a lot of the esports teams, almost none of them get any money if their team wins the tournament. All of their money comes from sponsorships and ads. So it should be the club or teams, whoever they're playing on, to push their players to grow a personal branding audience, because the bigger their audience is, the more crowd that they're going to draw to stadiums, to games, to their Twitch audience, etc. And that's how they can get more ad and sponsorship revenue. But it seems to be the same case of like the old NBA, right? I remember a quote from Mark Cuban, and he was like, the problem with all the owners in the NBA is they think that they're in the basketball business, and that's not the case. They're in the entertainment business. They're in the atmosphere business, because you don't come necessarily to an NBA game to watch basketball. Like, I would probably say like 60 to 70% of people don't necessarily come to watch basketball. They come to have a good time, and that's what you need to provide, is a good time. And whether it's the skill on the court, or if it's the halftime show, or if it's the hot dog that someone eats or anything, that's what a lot of people are coming for, not necessarily the talent, unless of course you have like a LeBron James or someone on the court.
Yeah, the experience is really the value there, right? The hardcore basketball fans are going to watch basketball regardless, but if you're coming to an event, it's about the experience.
Yeah, I love that quote. You can watch it like on TV, right? If you love basketball, you can watch it, and you're probably getting a better angle of it on TV. If you're going to the game, you're more likely going to it because the guys next to you are screaming and yelling, or the guy next behind you is pouring beer on you by accident, or whatever it is. That's what you're going there for, to scream and yell with your friends.
Right. Like, I went to the Seahawks game in December when they played the Chiefs, and it was a playoff qualifying game. And I'm not a Seahawks fan. I'm a Vikings fan. But I had an incredible time at that game because the environment is just unreal. Like, people go, it's so loud. People go crazy. It's electric. And so I just got caught up in it. I, you know, was with a friend, and just like, it was one of the funnest sporting events, and it was a good game too, which helped, but it was one of the funnest sporting events I'd ever been to. And I wasn't even a fan of the team. So I definitely understand that. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It, like, one of the best games that I've ever gone to is a hockey game. And I've only gone to one hockey game. I know literally zero things about hockey. I played NHL maybe once or twice when it was free on the Xbox, but that's about it. But I went to a Tampa Bay Lightning game, and it was extremely fun because the atmosphere that they built, the music that they were playing, the food vendors that they had, it all was kind of like a cohesive atmosphere. And it was honestly amazing. But that's what I don't think esports teams understand, because if you can build that fan loyalty there, and you build that fan loyalty to each player, that's when the ticket sales come. That's when the sponsorships come. That's when the crowds start coming more bigger and bigger. And that's when it becomes less volatile, so to say.
Definitely. Yeah. Build the audience, and then you have some security there.
Exactly.
You recently went on a 3-day water fast. Are you still on that water fast?
No, yeah. So it was actually I could only last 2.5 days because I needed to eat some food so I had energy for the event. So I went from Sunday night at 9 p.m. till Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. So was it two? No, Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Sorry. So 2.5 days. The first 2 days, I was completely okay. Like, my mind was clear. The inflammation was great. I wasn't too hungry or anything like that. But dude, I woke up at like 2 or 3 in the morning on Wednesday morning, and I thought I was gonna die. Like, I genuinely thought I was gonna die. I don't know why. I don't know what happened, but it was so bad. So I think if I were to do it again, probably like 1 day I could easily do. 2 days I could easily do. Like, if I ate at 9 p.m. on Tuesday, I would have been perfectly fine. But that Wednesday, man, it hit me.
I did a 3-day fast earlier this year. I actually had an kind of opposite experience where my second day was horrible. But then the third day I was probably in full ketosis at that point, and I was supplementing with some brain octane oil, I think it's C8 caprylic acid that, you know, crosses the blood brain barrier really fast. Mm-hmm. And so that probably kicked me into ketosis faster and changed how my experience of it. But yeah, super interesting. What made you want to do that?
I'm a guy who likes to just do things randomly, and I've been seeing it a lot. I might have seen one of your posts earlier this year about it. I was talking to Leanne and he did it, and I kept on hearing it on like Joe Rogan's podcast and other like internet people that I listen and pay attention to their content. So I was like, why not? Let's do it. I just came back from South by Southwest after eating a crap ton of like greasy food because it was all free. And I was like, let me just get my body back to normal and let's just go on like a 2-3 day fast. Let's try it. And then I did it with one of my friends, Mike, and he had like an opposite experience of me. It was funny because his girlfriend kept like shoving food in his face, like, ha ha ha, I'm eating. So maybe that was why he was getting more and more hungry. But same thing with Leanne. Leanne said that he was extremely hungry for the first 2 days, and then the last day he wasn't hungry really at all. Whereas mine was like a constant, steady, like low hunger for the first 2 days, and then third day it was extreme hunger. Like, the metaphor that I like to tell people now whenever they ask me is, you know, when you're in college and you're out of meal swipes on Sunday or whatever it is, and it's like one or two in the morning, and you're like, I can either sleep this off or I can go get some food. But it's like that hunger where you don't necessarily know if it's enough to get you out of the bed to go get some food or not.
Yeah.
That's the type of hunger that I had for like the first 2 days. So it was manageable. But man, dude, that last 12 hours was deadly. I ate an orange. It was so good. And then I had ramen for lunch and it was amazing. It was so good.
So the food tastes, that is one of the big benefits of the fast, is food tastes freaking amazing when you come out of it.
Yeah, dude, it was amazing. I loved it.
Did you think, were you thinking more about the physical benefits of it or the mental benefits or both?
I honestly should have did more research into it. I was basically going off of what people had told, like what I'd listened to and heard. And it was like, it helps with your inflammation. It helps with like clearing out your mind. And those are like the two biggest things that I was looking for, right? Was how does my body feel while I'm doing it? Am I aching? Am I tired? Am I being able to think clear? And it definitely helped me focus more in terms of like when I'm at a computer trying to do emails or at a computer trying to research something. I was able to hone in completely. Like, people said that they were like texting me and I wouldn't even like notice the phone going off or anything like that. I was just zoned in whenever I wanted to do something. In terms of productivity, I think it made me more productive, but that was more of a subconscious thing because I just wanted to keep myself as busy as possible so I didn't have to think about how hungry I was, so to say. So it kind of made me more productive, but I guess that was just something that came as a cause of me trying to not be hungry.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's super interesting. Yeah, I geek out about fasting a little bit as I'm kind of into the whole biohacking movement and mm-hmm. such. But I think down the road, I think most people will be doing, or at least recommended to be doing, like quarterly 3-day fast just for like the cellular autophagy to kind of like clean up your bad cells, essentially, to simplify that, and for a lot of other reasons too. But also, when you're in that state, like on the second or third day, and you're in ketosis, you don't have that glucose variability, so you're not like going up and down with your blood glucose, and which, you know, is incredible. I hate the keto diet because it's really hard to do as an athlete. I mean, I don't hate it. It's just hard for me. Mm-hmm. But I did love that experience of not having that up and down, just being able to focus in. It was awesome.
Yeah, like it's funny. I tried to explain to my dad like why I was doing it. So my dad is a very traditional and like very Asian guy, and he doesn't like believe in medicine or like anything that I do at all. And he's like, "You're so like," he's just looking at me like I'm weird. Like, and this is the same guy that if you get sick, right, in Vietnamese culture, if you get really sick, like the flu or something like that, what they'll do is they'll take like a silver dollar or a coin, spray lemon on it, and then they'll scratch your back like crazy, and it'll like tear up your back, but it's supposed to help you heal quicker. And it did. My dad did it to me and I healed like right away, and he'll believe that, but he won't believe like how I can eat without food, go without eating food for like 2 days, which is funny, but it's just like perspective again on like what you're raised on and stuff.
Definitely. Yeah, that's super interesting. I know like lemon essential oil is good for disinfecting and colds and such. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to that.
There might be. I don't know. It's just fun. I just find it funny how he believes that, but he won't believe this. But
that's pretty funny. So before I ask you my last question, where can people find you online? And is there anything else you want my audience to know about you?
Yeah. So if you go to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, anything, everything is at Get Chill Grind Up. That's GETCHOGRINDUP. You can then find the links to all of our podcasting, all of our Medium blogs, etc. on there. On LinkedIn, my name is Justin Nguyen. That's JUSTIN space NGUYEN. You'll see me with like a microphone picture and a big face of mine on there. That's me. Just connect with me, send me a personal invite, tell me that the Bag Mentality and Will sent you here. And then, yeah, I mean, just a little bit about me. I'm just a guy that's living, just trying to figure out stuff. I'm tasting as many things as possible right now, just trying a little bit of everything and seeing what sticks. So that's what I would tell you guys to do too, is like, try.
So good, man. So my last question, and I ask this to all my guests, is what's your bag, Justin? So the bag is your definition of success.
What's my bag? I would say my bag is being able to tangibly see how many people that I've impacted in my life. Like, yes, money is great, and money is definitely on the focus of mine to try to make a good living. But what's more important to me is like, how can I impact as many people in life? Some people, that's entrepreneurs, like Gary Vee, he wants to impact entrepreneurs. Tom Bilyeu wants to impact health. Same thing with Naveen Jain. My thing, I want to help students because I think that's the biggest piece that not enough people are paying attention to. Like, these are the kids that are going to be the future. Why are we not pushing them to learn more about themselves at an early age rather than just pushing them down rabbit holes? So I want to be able to be that guy that's like hitting the high school and college market that actually shows kids what they can figure out and what they can do with their life. Not just saying you'll figure it out, but showing them different paths. And I think that's going to be my bag later on, just helping the high school and college industries, man.
Man, I love that so much. Guys, go check out Justin, check out Get Your Grind Up, check out the Young and Dumb podcast. They've had some incredible guests on. And yeah, thank you again so much for being on the show, Justin.
Thank you, man.
Till next time.
Have a good one. Peace.
Wow. I'm so grateful you listened to the whole episode. I started this podcast, this company, this community to validate people who think differently and who want more for themselves and are trying to connect with other humans who feel the same way. If you resonated with this episode, it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on iTunes. Then go check out bagmentality.com and follow us on socials for our upcoming events. Go check out our Entrepreneur Resource Center, where we aggregate the influencers, courses, and tools you need to build a business, build wealth, and build health. And finally, go check out my accounts, Will Preble, LinkedIn, and Instagram is where I'm most active. And if you message me, I will respond to everyone who DMs me. Remember, you are valuable. You are a one of one. go out there and find your bag.